let me just briefly review what we discussed, what we did. We discussed like 3,000 years of Jewish history in half an hour. hopefully you have a flow chart here that describes. I would suggest that you keep it with you at every shiur so that as we go through, and I mentioned a personality that you're not acquainted with, you can whip out the chart and find his name on the chart. There's one question that was left over that someone asked me, and I'd just like to mention it. I mentioned that the oral tradition was passed down orally. That is, we had the Chumash, the interpretation of the text was transmitted orally until the time of Yehuda Nasi, where he realized that Jews were spreading around throughout the Roman Empire, and they needed some text to take with them, some code of Jewish law. And so he began to write it down. He wrote it down in a cryptic fashion, very sort of a note style, but nevertheless, there was some written text. And in doing so, he had to abrogate a point of Jewish tradition, which is Dvarim shebichtav yata rashai lomam balpeh, Dvarim shebalpeh yata rashai lomam bichtav. That is, the Jewish tradition maintained that the written law was transmitted in a written fashion, and the oral law was transmitted in an oral fashion. However, when he wrote down the Mishnah, had to invoke what was called the Hora'at Sha'ah. That is, the court or the prophet of the time has the right to abrogate Jewish law. It's based on the verse, Eit Lasot Lashem, Hefenu Toratecha. It's called the Hora'at Sha'ah, a ruling for the time. I mentioned that Eliyahu HaNavi did it in order to undo idolatry. Eliyahu HaNavi at Har HaKarmel sacrificed it at the foot of Har HaKarmel, despite the fact that you're allowed to bring sacrifices when the Beit HaMikdash there is in Jerusalem. How do you do it? Hora'at Sha'ah. Well, and there are a variety of examples, but one example is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's writing of the Mishnah, and subsequent the writing of the Gemara, where they felt it was not enough to have a cryptic text, they needed to write down everything. So someone asked me, correctly so. So that was good for Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, but how do we do it? We've been doing it for the last 2,000 years. That doesn't sound like a Hora'at Sha'ah. That sounds like a permanent abrogation of Jewish law. How do you do such a thing? The question has been asked, and the answer is that as long as the reasons stay valid, that is, it's a temporary abrogation, but as long as the reason for the abrogation remains valid, it sort of renews itself in every generation. But it was only meant to be temporary as long as necessary. There, text C. Okay. So that was one point. Now, and that's why right now we've done everything, because we don't have the memories or the stability to make a text. We don't have the stability or the memory in order to maintain all the Jewish tradition by heart. The next point that we discussed was we went into discussing the Mishnah. It talks about the differences between the obligations of men and the obligations of women, and we saw that there were two primary categories of obligations that women were freed from, that were different, fundamentally different than men. While women are obligated in all positive commandments, which are not time determined, and all thou shalts, they are freed from positive commandments, which are time determined. Positive commandments, which come from time to time. They're not continual commands. So we're going to get into that point in great deal detail today, because there's a lot of yeshivisha pilpul, a lot of yeshivisha discussion and analysis of what really is the essence of mitzvah aseh she'zman gamah. And I'd like to give you a taste of this yeshivisha discussion. The other category that we saw, which will be of importance if we get to it today and perhaps next week, is that married women are freed from obligations to their parents, to her parents, if it conflicts with her obligations at home. And we saw that, wow, clearly, if it's not a conflict, she's obligated. And what am I talking about obligations? I'm not talking about anything that contravenes the parent's honor. I mean, something like sitting in your parent's place, or that your husband cannot say, I insist that you sit in your father's place. Or I insist that you sit in your mother's place. He has no right to do that. But if your husband is, for instance, is having a business meeting in which he needs you there with him, and this may contravene with taking your parents to the opera or taking them out to a movie, which is an example of keep it open. They need you to take them to go somewhere, but your husband needs you to go with him to a business meeting, that responsibility to your husband comes first. And there are a variety of much more difficult complications. For instance, the mother is home, her kids are sick, her parents are sick. To whom does responsibility go first? The halakha is very clear. Your family responsibilities come first. Now, that doesn't mean that you leave your parents in the lurch. It means that you have to try to find ultimate solutions, of course. Try to be as industrious and creative as possible. But your ultimate priority comes to your family. Okay. We'll remember that point because it's of importance and relevance later on. There's some text.
What happens if your husband has to go to the hospital and your husband has to
finish this
meeting?
If you're parents pikuach nefesh.
You know.
If you're talking about pikuach nefesh, let's go to the Torah Kula. If it's pikuach nefesh sets everything aside. Right? So, yes, you can say, I'm sorry, but I love you very much, my husband, but pikuach nefesh. Okay? I mean, like in every other thing, there are rules. And hopefully we're in a marital framework in which a couple work out the problems together. It doesn't come into a clash. But it's not always possible. All right. Before we go on, there's a lot more for us to discuss. I'd like to take a stop and analyze a little bit more of what we mean when we say mitzvat aseh shehazman gama. And we're going to learn a little bit of Gemara today, some Rashi, Tosfos, Rambam, and a lot of interesting analysis. One of the interesting questions, which perhaps is an acid test for the definition of what it means a mitzvah which is time determined, is a Gemara which you have over here. It's a Gemara in Kiddushin. We've already seen the Mishnah part, the Mishnah where it says Makniten over here. We already saw that part, which talks about all the obligations a father has. Father has to a son and a daughter, and child has to the parent in the mitzvah to say. The whole Mishnah we already learned. We saw it inside Ellen's and Stetz. What I'd like to do now is to go down. You see where it's bracketed in the Gemara. What? You can write on it. They're for you. Okay. You see the bracket text? Is everybody with me? Where it says over here. One of the obligations we saw that a parent has towards a child is to circumcise him. Now let me make a very important statement. Halakhically, women are considered circumcised. It's not as if they don't need circumcision. Halakha says, "Kamanda mehile damya." They are circumcised. And it's very important because there are some pivotal halachot which require you to be circumcised. You must be circumcised before you eat Korban Pesach. Kol arel lo yochal bo. Now, a child that has hematuria, right, cannot, even though the child is not circumcised, because the halacha says you don't circumcise that child because it's a danger to them, that child can't eat from the Korban Pesach. Because de facto, he is an arel. It's irrelevant to the fact that it's not his fault, that the halacha said don't circumcise, they decide circumcising according to danger. Since he's not circumcised, he cannot eat from the Korban Pesach. Women eat from the Korban Pesach because the halacha considers it. The Gemara says, command the mehila damya. It's as if they're circumcised. Now, the question now comes about, is a mother obligated exercise for some. Okay? And the question can't say, well, she's not obligated in circumcision. How would it? The answer is no. She is having it because she's circumcised. The halakha starts off with the woman are considered circumcised. And therefore the question is perfectly relevant. She cannot circumcise her child. Now let's see what the Gemara says. Has an obligation to circumcise their child. Now, that's not multi, she has to make sure he's circumcised. She has to hire a mother. Why is she obligated? No, because there are many mitzvot that you say that doesn't apply to you, you can't do to others, not even do to others. There are, we'll see a couple of examples as we go along. For instance, if I'm not obligated, the question is, if we'll see a couple of examples. A woman has no problem about shaving, using a tara, a shave on her, a blade on her face. Right? Can she go ahead and do it to other people? Since the halakha doesn't apply to her, can she do it to other people? Okay, and we're going to go see that the answer is, in the halakha, probably not. That she's probably allowed to. They're banane for that. But the idea is your relationship to a mitzvah does have correlation to whether you're involved in that mitzvah as far as other people are concerned. Okay. Let's now see, however, the Gemara ends up. Ula mula, okay, where was all the brackets? That a parent has an obligation to circumcise the child. Minala, how do we know that a parent has an obligation to circumcise the child? It's there for it's written. We saw that Abraham circumcised his son Yitzhak. The Hecha, the low Mahale Abraham, where the father does not circumcise, the Hecha, the Efo, the low Shalom Moheloto Abib Abraham, Mechaida Beidina the Mimhale. Then the court is obligated to circumcise. How do we know that if the father doesn't fulfill the obligation, then the Jewish court has an obligation to take care of it? Dichtiv, himol lachem kol zachar. Make sure that all your male-born are circumcised. It's a general obligation at Klal Yisrael. Who represents Klal Yisrael? The Jewish court. Vehecha delo mahala beidina. And if at the age of 8 days and older, the court doesn't take care of it, Mechaib, when he reaches the age of 13, Mechaib ilu lemimhal nashik. He's obligated to circumcise himself. Dichtiv, where it's written, V'arel zachar, asher lo yimod so orlato v'nichrata. A male whose foreskin has not been circumcised, and he dies that way, v'nichrata is cut off from Klal Yisrael. Exactly. Karet is involved, it's not clear whether it's a punishment in this world, a punishment in the next world, or perhaps a combination of both. There are elements of all these views in Chazal. But it's considered a very serious crime. Yes?
I heard a case where a man died uncircumcised, he was Jewish, he was from Russia, and they circumcised him.
There are cases like that. There is a mention, of a child. Child or Rahman, halacha states that Rahman son, a child who dies before the circumcision, the circumcision is put off for God, that they do circumcise him before they bring the child. So the question is, continue. Ihi minalan. Ihi, now comes the clause, we're end of the first long line. Ihi nalan delo mechaiva. She. How do we know that she's not obligated to circumcise her son? For it is written, "Dechtiv kasher tziva oto Elokim." That Avram did as he was commanded. It doesn't say "ota." It doesn't say "otam." It was clearly his personal obligation. Oto v'lo ota. He Avraham and not she son. Okay, let's stop there. Now, Let's look at Tosfot. Let's look at Tosfot. Tosfot asks Shane this question. Otel v'lo, we know that a woman is not obligated to circumcise because of the pasuk that God commanded Abraham and not Sarah. In Tomar, and if you'll ask, Lamalikha, what do I need a pasuk for? Typically, let me learn it out. The mitzvah says shazman gamal. It's a positive command which is time determined. Shinimo mishmini, because a child is male child is circumcised from the eighth day, l'leidato. V'nashim p'tuah, the women are free. And it's because shouldn't it be because it's a positive command which is time determined? Why should women be free? Okay, that's Tosa's question. V'yesh lomar, sisters. Kivan, d'miyom hashmini v'hala, ein la hefzer. Since from the eighth day on, the obligation does not cease. Lav zman gramahu. It's not a positive commandment, which is time determined. True. But there's a period in which you can't go circumcised. And from the eighth day on, it continues. The rest is of life until there's no limit to the obligation. Okay? Yes?
But it's got to be one there, because last week somebody asked about mikvah. And you said, well, that's in a... And that cycles on and off, you know, if you want to think of it that way. Time cycles on and off. You need it because that's a not a fixed time thing. It has to do with each woman individually.
It's a good question.
Here to the baby, it's not a fixed time.
Okay, let me. You picked the wrong example because mikvah is a. There's no obligation on a woman to go to the mikvah. The proof of the matter is that I'm married to a woman. Don't go to the mikvah. If going to the mikvah after you menstruated, was an obligation, we'll never get to go to the mikvah too. Mikvah is the way of removing a problem. Now, but you are asking, you're thinking that. That is, you picked the wrong example, but your question is right. What bothers you about the whole question that Tosfos is asking, that somehow you have a picture of mitzvah seisha yoram gram as being a cyclical process. Right? Something
simple
though.
A fixed time thing,
not a certain
time
thing,
okay. That's different each.
What do you mean fixed time?
A fixed time thing that's the same for everybody. And not a time thing that's different for everybody depending on their biology, being when this kid decided to pop or when.
Okay, what you're saying, let me formulate your analysis a little different. You say, what does mitzvah d'aseh shazman grama mean? That it has fixed days in the calendar.
What time is
that? Kind of. But Mila, even if I would admit that Tosfos is wrong in this question, right? I mean, I don't understand that you. It's not a fixed day in the calendar. There's nothing about the 30th of July or the, you know, Tet Vav Teve that caused this obligation to begin. It can be any day of the year. There's no day of the year that requires Mila. It's part of the process. I mean, he was born on the eighth day. Yes, it can be any day of the year, any time, right? It can be any time. The fact that you can't do circumcision after the eighth day on Shabbos, that's because, you know, that we talked about last week, there's this lion sitting on me. I mean, it prevents me from doing circumcision, but it's nothing about circumcision narrowly. You're 100% right. The Rishonim said exactly that. We'll see. When we come to Lunar Reed, Rabbi Valk, was Rosh, if I'm not mistaken, was Rosh Yeshiva in YU, talks about this. He calls it Tosfos Reed, who says it exactly. That is, they don't understand Tosfos. Tosfos' question doesn't begin. What is Tosfos at? Tosfos asks the Mitzvah Seisha Zman Grama. This is not a Mitzvah Seisha Zman Grama, because it's nothing about a calendar date that makes the Mitzvah Seisha Zman Grama. Okay?
Yeah. If there is no father for some reason, does the obligation fall on the mother?
No. We just read, that's exactly what the Gemara says. There's no father, the obligation falls on the court, and if the court doesn't take it, the obligation falls on him. Yes.
Why don't we learn from an example of both groups of cars, so does that one answer?
You're asking a different question. You're asking, can women circumcise?
No, she took that herself and she...
That's because her son was being endangered and she realized, or her husband, but that's how you learn.
Why don't we pass the provision then?
That only shows that she saved her child's life or her husband's life by circumcising. It doesn't mean that was a pikuach nefesh question. That doesn't say, does the obligation devolve on her? You're asking a different question. You're asking, can a woman circumcise? That's a different question from the question, is she obligated to circumcise? Is the Jewish law required to take care of that obligation? Okay, let me give you another possibility. Yes? Please beg to differ.
Okay, beg to differ the Tosfos. You're saying it's not a mitzvah Shabbat is my brother.
No, the Tosfos argue asks it
because
should
the
be.
The Gemara, it says he's high up to do it even if he's 13 or whatever, and he has to do it. So
right.
Now that he's high up,
that's what Tosfos answers. That Tosfos answers. That's exactly what Tosfos says. The reason why the Gemara needs a pasuk because it's not a mitzvah Shabbat is my brother. Once it stops, it goes on. What? I didn't say it's wrong. Because her analysis was different. There are different, that she said, I don't understand Tosfos. Because Mitzvah Taseh Shazman Gram, as I understand, it's a calendar. But how would you understand Tefillin? That you wear Tefillin during the day and Tefillin at night? It's not a calendar problem.
She
doesn't
think
Tefillin
uniform.
No, it's
just
a fixed time process.
What?
It's the 8th day from birth. No matter that everybody's
age,
day of birth is
different. No, fixed time thing, that's how either calendar or time of day, that's the same for everybody.
Same for everybody.
At the same time.
All right, I can understand that. Yes. Yeah, but the Gemara finds a pasuk. No, the Gemara finds a pasuk. The question is, why did the Gemara need a pasuk? Let it be. Mitzvah Taseh Shazman Gram. That's what Tosfos asks. So Tosfos needs a pasuk because it's not Mitzvah Taseh Shazman Gram. Because it wasn't sickle cutting. Tosfos says. Let's look at. I want to. Before we go on any further, I'd like to show you Rashi and the Rambam. Look at Rashi. Rashi on the Mishnah, when the Gemara over here, in the small print on the right hand side of the page. Rashi, when Rashi defines what does it mean. Mitzvah Taseh Shehazman Grama. What does Rashi say? What does She'ein on the right hand side over here? It's underlined. Right. She'ein Hazman Grama. Look at Rashi. Shehazman Goreim Lashitavo. Something in the time caused it to come. Right? That's Rashi. Let's look at Rambam. The Rambam is over here. The Rambam, now everybody knows the Rambam wrote a major legal commentary. That's what we talked about, called the Yad HaChazakah. We talked about that. But the Rambam also wrote several other works, very famous. Nebuchim, he also wrote a commentary to the Mishnah when he was very young, right? He also wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot. He wrote a commentary to the Yerushalmi, which we're beginning to get the several comments. Now, let's see what he says again. Let's look at what's in the brackets in the middle. Let's read what the Rambam says. Umitzvat asay. There's a mistake here in the print. Umitzvat asay shazman grama. What is a mitzvat asay shazman grama? So the Rambam. Hein mitzvot shadam chayav la sotan bizman mugbal. That there is a limited time. Wait a second. According to Rashi, what does Rashi say? Rashi says, what Rashi looks at is time caused the onset of the mitzvah. This question is valid then. After all, there was a period you weren't obligated. Comes this time, and you're obligated. Tosfos says, why do I need a pasuk for the mitzvah? That's why Shazman Grama. So Tosfos is basing his question on what? On Rashi's interpretation. And what is the answering? He says it starts, it doesn't stop. Who's the answering? In his Havamina, in the beginning when he asked the question, who did he think like? Rashi. In his answer he says no. Mitzvah is a different thing. It's not just the onset. It's a fact that it starts, stops. Essentially what Tosfos is saying is what the Rambam says. The Rambam looks at it not only in the beginning part, he looks at it that it's limited, that it doesn't, that it ends. That's what makes the time determined. That it does, don't do it, do it. Don't do it. Not even the cyclical part bothers the Rambam. I mean, naturally, anything that's cyclical, you start, you stop, you start, you stop. That's, but the element for the Rambam is that there's a stop, the point where you stop. That's exactly what Tosfos is. The Rambam clearly, the Tosfos, in his answer, clearly holds like the Tosfos. By the way, what I just did now is classic yeshivish analysis. You know, what was the Havamim? What did I think when I asked the question? And now I give the answer. How is the answer different fundamentally from my question? So we said, the question was based on Rashi, that was important to the answer. And the answer came out to be okay, let's continue read the Rambam, because I don't know whether I have a chance, because I just want you to maintain some information. And we'll continue, let's just continue reading the Rambam's analysis. Kamo, what he gives example, Kamo, Saluda, the chauffeur, Filin, the Tzitzit, Shehen Chayabim Biyom, Velo Belaila, Chol Masha Domeleza. Anything that they, yes, you're obligated, no, you're not obligated. Mitzvah, okay, you're with me? We're after the bracket on the third line there. Mitzvah Asay Shalo Hazman Grama, Hein HaMitzvot HaMechuyavot Bechol HaZmani. Kamo, Mizu Make Utztaka. Now continues the Rambam, based on the Gemara that we haven't yet learned, but we will learn the Gemara. The Rambam says, "Kfar yadata, sheikar etzlenu." The fundamental principle by us is, "Ein lemedim ena klalot." You don't learn from rules. Umasha ma kol. The Mishnah says, "Kol mitzvot aseishes." Every uses that generalization term. Amnam rotzel amar hagol. It's a rule that's not for everything. But the rule is a generality. V'amnam masha nashim mechuyavot mi mitzvot asei u'masha inam mechuyavot mi masha magi aleihem eno talui b'klal. What women are obligated and not obligated, says, doesn't really depend on the principle. The principle merely describes the general rule. V'amnam nimsarim al peh. What women are obligated and not obligated depends on what the halacha from past now, from tradition, says they are. The heim dvarim shabal b'kalon. These are things that came by tradition. Halo yadata. Now, Kinnah is going to give us the exceptions. Halo yadata. Shachilat matzah b'lel pesach. V'simcha b'moadim. Okay, this is... He's going to list the things that women are obligated in, even though they're kasher k'mayim, which are time determined. For example, matzah on Pesach night, simcha on the holidays, hakel, which comes once every 7 years, tefillah, davening, underline tefillah, okay? This, I want you to remember this. This is a very important point we will discuss, which we will in a week or so, maybe 2 weeks. Analysis of women's obligation in prayer. You just remember that the Rambam says here that women are obligated in prayer. Okay, continue. Umikra Megillah. He said they're obligated in prayer, even though what? Even though they're positive commandments, time determined. What is a pos? Why is tefillah positive commandment, which is time determined? Shabbos min chamar. Shabbos min chamar. They have different times, and they're points just obligated in Shabbos. Time you're not. There's a time determined element. Okay, we're gonna have a big hassle about the Rambam. Because the fact that most women in the world don't daven is based on a different number. And I'm going to leave it up to you to decide what the Rambam really okay? But just remember that the Rambam here, the Parashat Mishnah, it says that women are obligated in prayer even though it's a positive commandment which is time determined. And it's a whole very, very important analysis. I don't want you to lose the time. Mikra Megillah, right? Mikra Megillah, Ner Chanukah, Ner Shabbos, Bekidah Shayom, Elu Kula Mitzvah Taseh Shehazman Grama. What are the positive commandments of your time determined? Remember, last week we talked about rabbinic commandments of time determined, whether women are obligated or not obligated, rules apply, right? Notice that the Rambam in this list of mitzvot includes how much are biblical, how much are rabbinic. The Rambam clearly holds a test vote that the rule of the women are free from powers of command or time determined applies. Biblical, rabbinic, it's irrelevant, right? So that he's everything in the same list. So he here follows the rules of the same. V'chol echad mehem mechuyavot al nashim kamo shem mechuyavot al nashim. This list I gave you, Megillah, Hanukkah, Kiddush, Abdullah. I mean, it is mentioned, by the way, he notes it doesn't mention Abdullah. We'll talk about Abdullah. Why does it mention? Because Rambam holds, the Rambam is no proof, because the Rambam holds that Abdullah is Kiddush, but from the other end. We'll learn about it. There's Kiddush when you go in, and there's Abdullah when you go out, but both of them are Kiddush. Rambam says it. Rambam says it. So they can't prove in the Rambam, but you know, he didn't mention, so. Alright. Yes. Elukulam mitzvah asei shazman grama v'cholecha, every the women are obligated just like men. Now, now the Rambam is going to give you a list of things which are positive commandments which are not time determined, and women are free. Let's see. Kamochen mitzvah piriya v'rivya, procreation, women are obligated. Very important. Even though Judaism relies on women to procreate, they're not obligated in procreation. We'll talk about it. Why not? We'll talk about why not.
I find that a bit strange.
It is a very strange. The Talmud Torah, theoretical, and I'm defining it the way it should be understood. Talmud Torah means theoretical halacha study, not halacha, not to know what to do, but simple setting the law that are not necessarily relevant to life. Upidyon haben and redemption of the child. Kol echad mehem mitzvot aseh shelo hazman grama v'af al pi kein ein anashim chayava behem v'amnam nisarim al pek kemo shezakhanu. It's because it was passed down the halacha, the oral tradition declares, and the oral tradition has its reason, and you'll see each of these, as we go through, we'll see has its reason that's derived from the text. Okay. But the rules that we have, mitzvot aseh shehazman grama, as a generalization, is a good one. It is a good rule. Okay. Now, I'd like to read with you from the Shabbat Tav Tohar of Harav Shmuel Valk. Shmuel Valk deals with this Tosfot. Okay, let's read again, remember what Tosfot said. The Gemara says that how do we know that women are not obligated? How do we know that women are obligated to Milah? Because there's a Pasuk. The Pasuk says that God commanded him and not her. Tosfot says, why do I need a Pasuk for? After all, it's a mitzvah to say Shazman Gama because you got to circumcise on the eighth day. Says Tosfot, says Tosfot, what? That it starts on the eighth day, but it doesn't end. But Rav Valk is not happy with that answer. Let's see why not. The fundamental assumption in Jewish law and the Jewish exegesis is that there are no words unnecessary. And if the Torah could send it in a shorter fashion, it said it in a longer fashion. Every word counts. The fact that the Torah could say, Kasher Tziva Elokim, and Avram did that God commanded. Now you say, but it's a prettier sentence if he puts it. The prettiness. One could say, that's a prettier sentence. Right? That's the halacha does not begin from that. The halacha brings in that every word is counted. So the word kasher tziva uto is relevant. Now, the chen mashma, not the Tosus, he's in the middle of an article, so we're sort of just stepping in the middle. The chen mashma, the Tosus, kedushin daf chavtet amen aleph, dvarim hamatkinim uto, here in the first line of Rambam. And he's now quoting the Tosus. Oto velo uta. Shiksha. What did Tosus ask? We're now in the second line. Namuleikha. What do I need a pasuk for? Typically, let me learn it out. The mitzvah taseh shazman gramahu. Shemimo v'shminim lidat v'leidato. V'nashim tuvot. So what is Tosus? Now he's just quoting Tosus. Yeshlomah. Kivan de Yom Hashmini Vahala Engla, except from the eighth day and Lav's Man Gramar, it's not possible to have a time to it, and therefore that's why I needed a pasuk. Atan, end quote. The Chola Kashim. I'll still lose the special mitzvah of circumcising on the eighth day. You know, Mila, he says, there's really two parts to mitzvah Mila. There's a special mitzvah what? Of circumcising on the eighth day. It's so special, it sets aside the law of the Shabbos, you don't have Shabbos. From that time on, if you didn't circumcise on the eighth day, you circumcised nine. No, that's right, Tosis is right. So that element, Tosis may be right, that the fact that the Mila continues on that spruce of Namitza, but there's this element of Yom HaShmini, the special quality obligation to circumcise on the eighth day, which is clearly Mitzvot Aseh. It's clearly only on the eighth day. It's lost after the eighth day. So what is Tosis helping? He says, Ezra. We are forced, therefore, to say, okay, now we're in the, where it's underlined, the second line of that underline, that Tosfos holds, Shamitzvah shel biyom hashmini hi mitzvah miyuchada or miyuchedet, ve'ein achelet miikar hamitzvah shel milah. It's a special added twist to milah. But the essence of Mila is not a mitzvah aser shazman grama. Yes, there is this special quality, special rule. Right? There's, look at mitzvah Mila. Women are obligated to circumcise, not on it. It's not a mitzvah aser. Right? It's not a mitzvah aser shazman grama, says Tosa, because it continues on. Well, there is that special part about but that, yeah, women are not obligated. That is, women are not obligated in that. Why? Because that part really is mitzvah aser shazman grama. But the mitzvah of Mila per se, if I'm asking, is a mother obligated to circumcise? The answer might be yes if it wasn't. She might not be obligated to circumcise on what? On the eighth day. But our question is she obligated to circumcise? That's clearly relevant, unless if I didn't have that special pasuk. Ve'ein achelek, let's continue right after the underline. Ve'ein achelek mi'ikar hamitzvah shel Mila. Right? ולכן, מכיוון דמיום השמיני והלאה אין לה הפסק, והיינו עיקר המצווה של מילה, לכן חשובה כאין הזמן גרמה. Okay? Now, I don't want to continue on, because we used up a lot of time, and I want to do other things. I just want to show you another answer. We have, the Tosaf that we have in our Gemaras, was the Tosaf that the printer, these are additions from starting from Rashi's grandchildren that added to the analysis of the Gemara. We have one tradition, which is in many Gemaras is called the Tosfot Tuch, that tradition. There are other people. There's the Tosfot Harash, there's the Tosfot Harid, other collections of the Tosfot, which are also extant, and they have different answers. So look down where the second line, where the second underline is. Ubetosud rid ba'iti, and the Tosud rid, I saw a different answer. Vahatenach miyom hashmini, velo kasha, what about the eighth day? Velo kasha, she'en hayom kavua viyadua bashana. He says, there's no particular day of the year which requires me. It's whenever it comes out, that's what comes out. Let me give you a similar sort of analysis. Let me give you a different sort of analysis. The Tosfos and the Ritva say, you know why it's on the mitzvah to say Shazman Grammar? I can't talk about mitzvah to say Shazman Grammar. Because the time-determined quality of this mitzvah, right, is really on the child. It's the child's obligation to be circumcised. I, the mother or the father, have to carry it out. But the mitzvah is really what's being fulfilled on the child, not on the person doing it. Okay? So their analysis is, when do I talk about mitzvah tasei shazman grama, when the obligation is for me to do it, it's my body, I'm doing it for myself. I'm not doing it for myself, I'm doing it for my child. I'm actually fulfilling it for my child. The person, it's not my obligation. The father is not, it's not his mitzvah milah. The mitzvah milah is really on the child. The child is an infant. The child can't do it to himself in the eighth day. So the halacha says, so the parent has the obligation to do it for the child. Or the court has the obligation to make sure the child is circumcised. But in essence, it's not the parent's obligation, it's the child's obligation. So I can't free the mother because it's a mitzvah taseh shazman grama. The child is a male. Well, the child's not obligated to any mitzvah. The whole discussion is, it's the child's obligation. I, as a parent, gotta make sure that the child does it. He's 8 days old, like, he can't do it. So I, as a parent, have an obligation to come make sure that he does what he's obligated in. He's a male, he does it. It's a mitzvah taseh shazman grama, is not relevant there. Right? I, as a parent, make sure that he does what he has to do, which he can't do, he's only 8 days old. So I can't be putter because I'm a woman. What does it make a difference? I'm putter a woman. Make sure he does what he's obligated to do. And that mitzvah taseh shazman grama is not relevant to the child, either because he's a male or because he's not obligated at all, per se. That's one. That's another cute analysis.
Excuse me. Yeah. If the mother engages some male who is fit to do it, it is just as if she has done it.
That's correct. That's correct. But we're not saying the mother can't or shouldn't do it. The question is where she's obligated. Yes, the mother can. Okay, sure.
She can engage someone.
Sure. Yeah.
Couldn't you say that Mila is a mitzvah of fish as money grandma because you can't do it at night, you only do it during the day, so it's on or off, on off?
The Tosis asked that question. We didn't need that on the Tosis. Tosis says the Gemara goes according to the one that holds it. Okay. We don't do it. Okay. Let me ask you another question. The Gemara says that how do we know that when a woman brings a korban, there's a special thing by a korban, that when you bring a korban, you have to do smicha on the korban, you have to lean on the korban. The Gemara says, learns out, v'samchu b'nei Yisrael et yideihem, that men are obligated to do smicha, women are not obligated to lean on their ancestors. The Gemara will later see in a short while that women did do it because they wanted to do it. Allah has said it's all right. It gives them nachat ruach. It gives them spiritual satisfaction, pleasure, and it's very relevant about analysis of what we allow women to do, even though they're not obligated to do it. And it's very, very important to our discussion. But the Gemara says that women are not obligated to the smicha. Says the Turi Eben, why do I need this pasuk? The samchu b'nei Yisrael et yideihem. B'nei Yisrael below, b'nei Yisrael. You don't do smicha at night. Korbanot, the mitzvah of smicha is only brought during the day. You don't do smicha at night. So it's a mitzvah that says shazman grama. So his analysis is, again, very, very insightful. When I put tefillin on in the morning, the next day when I put on tefillin, is that the same mitzvah or a different mitzvah?
It's
a different mitzvah. It's not. Why? Because if I fill my obligation today, right, I have another obligation tomorrow. Right? It's the same, it's a different, every day is a new obligation. That's why I say it's a mitzvah tasei shazman grama, because every day, the nighttime stops the mitzvah. That's what the Rambam said, the mitzvah is but. But if I didn't do smicha today, comes night time, and I can't do smicha at night, and then I want to do smicha the next day, is that a new mitzvah? The smicha that I did the second day, is that the, right? You understand? If I didn't do smicha, I was supposed to bring my korban Wednesday. I couldn't do smicha because it was nighttime. And I'll come the next morning. And now I can do smicha. Is that the same mitzvah or a different mitzvah? It was the same mitzvah. So the nighttime didn't stop me, didn't make it a new mitzvah. It's not that there's a cyclical nature. The nighttime didn't stop the mitzvah. What is the nighttime? The nighttime is like Shabbos. Right? It's like the Shabbos in between that doesn't let me do something. That it's not inherent in the mitzvah. It's something, well, it may be inherent, but it's not a new mitzvah.
But look at this. Once you do it, you've done it. Until you've done it, you still have that
mitzvah. It's new mitzvah, same mitzvah, all of that. That's good. Let me ask you the one last thing. A whole bunch of very fascinating things. Bikurim. Okay. Bikurim, first fruit, are brought only between. Okay, from Shavua to Chanukah. Okay, are women obligated in Bikurim? Yes! It's only between Shavua and Chanukah. How do I know? I know? Look, I've already, how do I know all these things? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, top of the page 27, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Marab, Nechem Tana Dever Rabbi Shmael, Amar Kav, because the pasuk says, Ish of Isha, Ki Yesem Mikol Chatat Adam. Now this deals with what's called Asham Gzelot. A person stole, and he swore, he was brought to his suit, brought to court, and he says, I didn't steal. And he swore. There were no witnesses, but the guy suspects him, or he has one witness. He suspects that he stole. And probably because there's one witness. And he can make him swear in court. He lost. And then he comes and he admits that he lies. He has to bring a special carbon, it's called Asham Zenot. Okay? And we learn from this, and it says, Ish o Isha, ki yasem mikol chatat adam, kishva katub ish u ish, isha le ish, lachol onshim sheba Torah. So you see in this question of theft, and the carbon, the line, the man and woman are all are equated in the Torah. Dvei Rabbi Elezer, Tana Rabbi Elezer said, Amad Ka, the Pasuk says, Ve'ela ha-mishpatim asher tassim lefnerem, and these are the law that you should place before them. Lifnehem, ishva, katuv, isha leish, lechol adinim shebetorah. When it comes to all laws, men and women are equated. Dvei Chizki atana, amakra. Dvei Chizki says, I have another pasuk. V'im shor nagahu, if it should be a goring ox, ve'imit ish o isha, and he kills a man or a woman, and if the court, I mean, actually this in does not mean if, but it's when the court should force upon him a punitive punishment of money and monetary, he should give the worth of his life. So you see again, who's the defendant? Actually, who's been killed here? A woman or a man. It makes no difference in the Torah. It makes no difference who's the defendant here. What? The victim. That's correct, but it makes no difference whose life's been taken, a man's life or a woman's life. It's all the same. Right? And in fact, like in many systems in I'm not sure, many systems at the time, you know, a woman get killed. What must I say? Men and women are obligated, as far as if you kill a man, you kill a woman, it's the same. Okay, let's stop here. The Gemara goes on and analyzes why the different verses. I don't want to go into it.
The premise is that what you pay monetarily is what the man was worth, and the woman doesn't make money. So.
Well, that's the question, how you evaluate. But the point is, in the Gemara discussion here, it depends on what my responsibility is, my shor, kofar nefesh implies, the Rambam in many places, that you really should have died, because you're negligent. You have an ox that's a goring ox. You really should die. Right? But the Torah says, look, you didn't do it. It was your ox that did it. You didn't sick the ox on it. You were negligent. You didn't intentionally kill that person. So therefore the Torah says, we'll have rahmanas on you, but you really should have died for it. And they said, it's a man or woman, you should have died. That's all the Torah, that's the analysis. Okay.
So
you paid for it, not what could you put in that? That's all right. Let's turn the page. There are a lot of halachot here, which at this point, I don't really want to go into. Let's go to the top of page 29. Ish, ish. Okay, now we're talking about sexual relations. Ish ish al kol she'er b'saror lo tikvu legalot erba. Each man same man. Each man, to all of his relatives, no tikkunim, they're going to, don't even come close to uncover their nakedness. Now, I just mentioned as an aside, the language, no tikkunim, don't come close. This, the analysis of that terminology was adult, as you just said, don't get to erva. I mean, don't tikkunim, they got to erva. The question is, at what point is there a biblical prohibition? Rambam is an opinion based on a Sifri. The tikkavu means fucking. Don't even come close. It's not even not only sexual relations forbidden, but even fucking. Anything that's coming close, repertoire. The Ramban holds, no, that's the Torah's terminology of how the Torah describes sex relations, coming close to our sexual relations. But the word tikkavu, it does not mean foreplay, and foreplay is only rabbinically prohibited. The Torah only prohibits and punishes the sexual relations itself. That's an aside. Matzimur says, Ma Talmud Lomar, what does the Talmud teach us? Nefesh Namar Ish Ish. Because the first verse started off Ish Ish. Engli Ela Ish. I would think perhaps only male. That only men are forbidden in sexual relations. Right. And ish mamash, shehu musar ayyudei isha, that he's forbidden sex relations with a woman. Isha musar ayyudei ish, meaning how do we know that a woman is obligated to have sex relations with a man? Tamaluma lo tikrevu, arei kashnaim, lo tikrevu means don't both you come close, implies woman as well. And the word does the exact same thing as far as the punishment. Now, the first part is the prohibition. Now, the punishment. V'nichetu ha'nefashot ha'asot mikerav amam, and they will be cut off from the nation of Israel for their prohibition. Matam odonar, why do I need v'nichetu? Fish ne'mar ish, shiachol eli eli ishu ha'mushkaret ala isha. I would think that only a man is forbidden to have a sacrificial woman. But a woman is not punished. Isha anusha kareva yedei ish. How do I know that a woman is punishable for her sex relations with a man? Amagoma hanefashot. Right? Okay? Hanefashot. Plural, unspecified, avei kanshman, you see too. Let me explain to you why it's so revolutionary. I mean, we assume that women are independent agents. That, you know, when the Torah gives a prohibition, the prohibition of the man and the prohibition of the woman. That was not true in other cultures. And a lot of times, that's the Torah's assumption. So women are independent agents. And just as it's forbidden, the sexual relations are forbidden, the women have intimacy, the women have minds, the women make decisions. The women are punishable. It's not that their fathers have to take care of them, or their husbands have to take care of them. Women are independent agents, and therefore, and the Torah, that the halacha is going to great lengths to prove that so. Women are not chattel. They're independent agents, and therefore they have their own will, and they're punished separately. And that's the means, that's what's being demonstrated here. As my Rebbe, when he learned this Gemara with this halacha, the Rebbe says, you should know that if just as us from boy all the girls, and this is for the girls all the girls. That's how we
work
down.
Almost common enough.
I understand what you're talking about.
Are you talking about consensual relationship with both consent? It's not talking about relationship.
Of course. Now, and I'm about that, there was only great. It's a wonderful reason to point out that there is a distinction. We will, maybe sometime when we talk about women and minion, okay, I'm going to have to talk about the laws of martyrdom. Because the laws of martyrdom change when there's a minion present in the life. And the question is, do women count for a minion for martyrdom? Don't women count for a minion for martyrdom? And many will be many surprised at things I didn't count for. Yes? Yeah, brothers and sisters.
Well, that means it isn't, you didn't, it wasn't.
Forbidden sexual relations.
No, this is incest.
It's incest. There may be incest, right? It applies everything. It's a general principle. What we're doing is called binyan av. One of the 13 principles, one of the principles called Binyanah. Binyanah means the Torah establishes a fundamental principle. Binyanah, and I said this is the archetypal example. And once I set up the principle that men and women are equal, example, as you point out, the example is talking about incest, but it's true whether it's incest or the woman is a menstruate, or talking about out of wedlock, or a sexual animal relationship with an animal. It makes no difference. Men and women are the same. Now, the
definitely everything puts except in all these things don't apply in marriage.
No, of course not. Yeah, marriage. Food. Now, well, the point is. There is, however, in halakha, fundamental difference between men. And that has to do with. That halakha determines. In a sexual relations, if you're being forced, okay, sort of a duress situation, halacha maintains that a woman can be passive. Halacha determines that a man can be passive. The man, the halacha determines that the very fact that a man has an erection is already can't be passive. A woman, however, can claim that she was passive. That's halacha. Under duress. That's under duress. Okay, that is a fundamental difference. Even though there's a forbidden sex relations, the halacha does recognize that volitional. Volitional sex relations. When it comes to volition, a woman can be raped. And then she has no halacha. The more it talks about these situations, the more it talks about educating, because there was a period where women and a marriage night were being raped. And the halacha talks about, let's publicize the fact that a woman doesn't have to martyr herself, because she just got married, and all of a sudden the law of the matter comes riding on his horse, and it's called the law of rights, it was very humble, the law of the right of the first night, and he come in, and the woman would commit suicide rather than sleep. Raped by the law of the manor. And the Gemara says, we have to teach our women. The Gemara talks about why we think we educate them, they don't publicize. There's a lot of discussion about that passivity is not. Yes, she's a married woman, passivity is
not.
It did exist in Europe. Exactly. I'm not as cultured as you are. Prima nocis. Right the first night. No.
I have a question. In two places you quoted the use of plural to imply that it means both men and women. That the use of the plural
means I don't speak the same
language. No, I only speak eight.
I started up on it. I didn't know that.
Is that family acknowledge that when you see plural that it means both men and women?
Yes, especially when the first title, the title says each man, it should be used, I'll give an example. Right. The Gemara says, ish et avi v'imo tirao. We did it before. The Gemara says, what is a tirao? Why is it men and women? In other words, when you start off the sentence in the singular, and then you end up in the plural, and when the singular was male, and the end of the plural, the Gemara says, where they say, well, that's not the issue. Now, of course, the Gemara is going to ask, and I don't know what your answer is. So if so, you can use the plural, why not say ish? You're right in misleading in the beginning and have to fix it up at the end. The language is singular, it says ish, which leads you into thinking it's male, and then ends off the sentence with a plural. The Gemara throughout will say that it means the ish in the beginning doesn't mean, remember that. The ish means to rule out a minor. Ish means an adult, that's what the ish comes to mean. And not to rule out woman, but just to rule out katan. Yeah, but it didn't start off with ish.
Ish of it.
No. Excuse me. What I said was, if you start off with the sentence ish, and then you end up with ish et aviv ino tira'u.
Distributing the ish with the sentence.
That's very interesting. But I can Google that. Was one of the latter inventors of Gonin. really known for his battles against philosophical writings, for his battles against the Karaites. It's cut the left side to go. Shloshim mitzvot. Or if you count them, only 29. It was approximately. Shloshim mitzvot hein, שהאנשים חייבים ואנשים פטורות. הם לא עברו את הדברים הפריעים. ולא פירש אותם, אני רוצה לגאור, זה לא אקספוין, זה פגוע. ורבי יצחק בן גייל כתב בירושל ואלוהים, ורבי יצחק בן גייל, זאת אומרת, אקספוין מה they are. Where are they 20, 30? מילה, אני לא עברו את הרגיעה. The obligation to come to the bait of this, יראה כל זכוכה. The obligation to be all in the regal, come to, oh, there's only obligation of men. Women have no obligation to come to the only Lodega. No obligation. The Yotzik Tzavah Kozachar, the obligation to go to war with the males. Ushkalim, to give half a shekel. That's a good question. If we ever get to discuss about women in armies, I will discuss everything. Women in armies, guys, okay. Guy did me more life and enough time to prepare. We'll discuss it. Shkalim, okay? Kala over al chidin. So, okay, that's on the mail. Pijon b'chor. Give me the first point. Ish, he can say me menu shekvat zera. A male who has a nocturnal emission, that he falls to carry those laws apply to a male and not a female. It's a little bit surprising, by the way. I should point out, the guys in the building, a woman can be a balat keri too, even though it's not biologically, you're not about it in an omission, so to speak. But a woman who has sexual relations with a man, and then semen comes out of her, she's called a balat keri. She can have the laws of the keri, so I don't know exactly what he means. Vakolim shalayitana eva likovo, v'nei ha'aron v'lovinoto. A kohen who has an obligation to be, as a prohibition to be metameh to Mizrah, prohibition to be metameh, the daughter of the Pharaoh, that applies only to male Pharaoh, not the daughters of Pharaoh. Except, it's a nice of Ella the Grobo, in the second line, says there is an obligation for a Kohen to go to the funeral of the relative, right, from the second Kohen. Because the pasuk is b'nei ha'av v'lo b'no da'av. V'chayav ha'av l'mulet b'no, l'fdoto, l'lamdot Torah, av'lo lo v'en. By the way, remember last week I told you there were other obligations which are there, which is what? Teaching Torah, teaching to swim. I'm just mentioning that. Remember I told you, you may remember that I mentioned that those latter things, that the halachas, nachas, were eitz of tova. There's a things that a father should do, should teach his son to swim, and should teach him a trade, should, but they're not absolute obligations. And you see here, the Rosajigon, at least your doesn't list them, clearly he holds that they're not clear obligations. Or you could say there's an obligation on the woman as well. You could say that. Okay, let's continue on. That's not clear. Sukkah, lulav, shofar, tzitzit, kriyat shema, tefillin, the Talmud Torah, all on the male. Piri viridia, procreation. Nora of the aim, the keeper of the aim, honoring and respecting and fearing your parents. If this applies to the male and not the male, the female, when? She needs a reshut achem alayim. And when she gets married, she's free from these. So that's a distinction with male and women. Hakafat harosh. There's a prohibition for a man to shave off his sideburns and have her head thrown like a monk. Okay, that's called hakafat harosh if I was only male. So I could be crazier than you. V'hashchatat zakan, shaving the beard. And even though some women do have beards, the halacha says that doesn't apply to women. Hasmichot, leaning on the animal. Hasmichot, by a korban, raising up the korban mincha. Hagashot, that refers to bringing the korban mincha to the mizbeah. Hakmitzot, taking off, there was a certain korban, there was a mitzvah of taking was called a comex of the flower, which is essentially a fistful in which you clean off the top and the bottom of these three fingers. That's called a comex. Miliko, it's a form of shkita on a bird that usually leaves a fingernail. A kapalo, receiving the dam, the sprinkling of the dam, which are worked not by Kohanim, but by Kohanim and not by Benot Kohanim. There are both by Nashim below Nashim, called Elish Nashim Mitzvah. All these are the 30 Mitzvah. No, that's only about, that's only respect, that's respect. I mentioned that, no, she doesn't have to do those positive actions. You have a good point there. Why does he use the word Mona? I told you the people that I mentioned last week, I don't go into the technicality, but people in Mona include a whole variety of obligations. Okay, we talked about them last week. She is halakhically free from all the positives. The negative things are not sitting in parents' seat, not criticizing your parents, not that she is obligated. So that doesn't contravene any familial responsibility. But a married woman, when push comes to shove, she and her family responsibility come first over her parents.
Those are mixed marriage selects, that
well, the ones that you mentioned.
The rabbinic amplification of the
admonition.
By sitting in my parents' seat, I'm not showing respect. I'm an obligation to show respect. I'm in the battle in a sense. Let me just, you're raising a very subtle point. There are certain things that I'm obligated to do. Is there a prohibition not to work for a male who doesn't work for him, what is he doing? Is he violating any Gaushtam? Is it an owner? But he hasn't. The onus is upon him because he didn't do a positive. By sitting in my parents' seat, I'm not violating Baal Shatna. I'm not doing respect. It's a Baal Shatna. It's called Bitur Hasid. It's a loud, it's a sense of...
I mean, that every second I don't sit in my father's seat, I'm respecting him.
That's my motivation. If I keep walking in the back, my parents see. I don't sit in it willfully, yes. It's an easy answer. Only of those things which she has to do. That is, if the husband says, bring me a pen, and my kid says, bring me a pen, I'm not obligated, no. I have no obligation to my husband. When I married my husband, I did not obligate myself to bring pens to my husband. I would suggest that you don't go home and tell this to your husband. Certainly don't tell it, tell you. I said so. But that's very, it's a very important. I discussed this in very briefly when I said, if the father says bring me water, the mother says bring me water, yes. Give the father first because the mother has an obligation to feed the husband. But if the father says, bring me the newspaper, the mother says bring me the newspaper, I'm not so sure we're going to allow him to bring the newspaper. That's not part of the family responsibility. But there is an element of Shalom Bayis. Obligation to respect my children. Okay? I can't abuse my children. I ought to respect my children as human beings. It's my house for them. Right? When I make a good deal for my children. important. It's not something that comes out of my, you know, I may be wrong. Let me check this up, because the obligation is for the husband. The husband supports your wife's children. That's good.
Let me check.
But I think that I don't think the mother has an obligation, legal obligation. I mean, I don't think that the Jewish court can throw her in prison because she didn't make a good meal at Hanukkah. Let me just point out right now. Okay, we're going to call it quits now. Let me just tell you what's on for the agenda next week. So that you can keep. Those contracts, please keep. And I would suggest I discuss them last
week.
I hope that by next week we'll have the text. So if you want to take the text with you, you're more than welcome. Be sure you come back next week. What you've taken, you can keep except for the text. Next time, if you should be back, so I don't think we'll need it. Let me just tell you what I want to talk about. The fundamental question that we haven't dealt yet. Fundamental question we haven't dealt with is, why did the Torah free women from poverty and not make sure that I'm concerned? Is because the Torah felt they don't need it, they weren't good enough to do it. So what's the motivation? And we will read, we will start reading stuff, material, starting from the 16th century, read some of the Shimshon of Bel Hirsch, read some of Aaron Lichtenberg of Soloveitchik, read some of Schechter, Herschel Schechter, and also read selections the Rav and from Sober. As you go through it, I will leave it up to you to determine what's apologetics and what's real, because the answers are really not very good. I'm being honest with you, but